I just want the body.
Hot, too fat.
Skinnier.
Narcissistic.
Everyone's an expert.
Of a public obsession with appearance.
Nobody's perfect with Tom Tilley on Triple J.
Today's show is actually a reaction to this email. It hit the Hack inbox during our mental health theme week last year. It's from a woman called Sarah Evans. I've had anorexia for 10 years and I've had admissions to hospital with no real improvement. Statistically, I'm lucky to be alive. Along with this nightmare I live and breathe every day, I've lost who I am. I do not remember me before anorexia. I have isolated and disconnected the real life with OCD, anxiety and depression, which came hand in hand with the disease. It's a disease that hides in the shadows and a disease that makes you out to be the elephant in the room. There is only one support group here in Hobart. I'm hoping, could you please, Hack, highlight the tragedy and stigma of eating disorders? Now, that is a really strong email, and actually so strong that we got Sarah into the studio. Sarah, thank you so much for writing to us first and to joining us now.
No worries at all, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Can you tell us how much your eating disorder has affected your life?
Oh, it's all-consuming, Tom, unfortunately. It's a living hell. Every day is a nightmare. It's very all-controlling, and I guess in a way it's been a dark shadow that's followed me over the last 10 years. It's insidious and it pervades nearly every area of my life.
Right, so can you go about normal things like a job or relationships?
I'm not currently working at the moment. I've been in a long-term relationship. Fortunately, I think part of my disorder is that I am highly functioning. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I can still read and do a lot of things that probably given a lot of other girls or women in my situation can't. So my attention span is quite good. I do live every day. It's just I live with anorexia every day and the thoughts around that. So eating, not eating, basically. Eating consumes my entire day.
Yeah.
The idea of food. Yeah.
Christine Morgan's joined us in the studio. She is the CEO of the Butterfly Foundation, which is an eating disorder support group. Christine, how common is this experience that Sarah's having?
Eating disorders affect 4% of the Australian population.
Wow.
So that is close to a million Australians, and less than 25% of those people are accessing treatment.
Yeah, that's really, really scary actually when you think about it, because they don't really have good survival rates, do they?
No, they don't. And Sarah, can I say how amazing it is that you have the courage to speak out on this? Statistically, you have said that you are lucky to be alive. Now, eating disorders cover anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder, atypical presentations. For those with anorexia nervosa, 1 in 10 will be lucky to be alive 10 years later.
That is absolutely frightening and alarming.
It is beyond comprehension. To unpack that a little bit, when you suffer an eating disorder, it has a horrific impact on your body. You cannot escape the physical consequences of what happens when your mind is driving the demons around eating. So you have a physical impairment, and you also have a very elevated suicide rate. And some of the studies coming out of the United States at the moment have suicidation happening in over 50% of people with bulimia nervosa.
Have you felt suicidal, Sarah?
No, I must admit I haven't. Mm. But in saying that, Tom, I think sometimes that the desperation can seem like the only way out for people is suicide, that you just, you cannot see beyond it. You can't see a recovery, you can't see a future, and you just want the thoughts to stop.
Yeah, Stu has texted in. He says, love, love, love to you, Sarah. The world loves you. Be strong, which is amazing. We're talking to Sarah Evans. She's battled anorexia for 10 years, and her email to hack@abc.net.au inspired today's show. And the big question we want to answer today is, if you or a friend are battling with an eating disorder, where do you go for help? Where do you get effective help? And so if you or a friend are in that situation and you've been able to get help, we'd love to hear from you. 1-300-055-536. Now, some people, of course, look for help online, and they often look to other people who are going through the same thing, which makes a lot of sense, right? Well, not necessarily, because sometimes these sites are actually really dangerous and people end up trading ideas on how to push their eating disorder to greater extremes. And these sites are sometimes called pro-ana sites. And in France, actually, people that run them can actually be put in jail. The sites are so controversial and they're often very secretive. But somehow, our reporter Joe Lauder has actually convinced the moderator of a pro-ana site to talk to us.
I'm logging on to my pro-ana. It says it's a site dedicated to the support or recovery of those suffering from eating disorders or body dysmorphic disorders. But today, people are sharing their lowest ever weights, how many calories they've eaten, what's the best job for an anorexic person, and the tapeworm diet. The site reminds me of the MySpace era, with lots of emo lyrics, teens posting black and white photos of knobbly knees, thigh gaps, and sharp hip bones, and venting about their daily anxieties.
They want to be around people like them. They want to feel like they have friends. They want to feel like they're not alone. It can be a very difficult thing to deal with all alone.
Pro-ana members are extremely secretive, but I managed to speak to Kim, a moderator of My Pro-ana. Despite losing 30% of his body weight, no one picked up that Kim had an eating disorder, and there was no one he could be totally honest with. I've spoken to about 6 MPA members, and every one of them says the same thing. It's such a relief to be understood.
It's very difficult to find people in the real world who relate, because it's not an everyday thing. It's not something people are familiar with. And the general reaction tends to be either, oh my God, you need to get help, or something condescending like go and eat a sandwich, or especially for those of us who are male, it's, you know, no, you don't have an eating disorder, you're a man, they're only for teenage girls.
What are the positives of the site?
Positive of the site, well, it stops people being alone. Being on the site can teach harm reduction. That's actually very common. The site also functions as a distraction from life. I mean, that's primarily what I used it for. My life was no fun, so I went on the site and I could just be on a forum and talk to people and I could forget about it for a little while.
But the most notorious aspects of Pro-ana are the tips, where people can learn dangerous techniques for weight loss, accountability, diets, and Thinspo, where pictures of very skinny people are idolised. The French government last year introduced big fines and 1 year in jail for people running sites that encourage excessive thinness. For someone without an eating disorder, it's alarming.
Especially in the diet forums and the competition and challenges forums, they often have a competition where you get points or you try and lose the most amount of weight. However, it does not encourage purging or laxatives.
This girl, who we're calling Grace, has now recovered from her eating disorder. In the early stages of her recovery, she avoided pro-ana sites, but now she's back on My Pro-ana to give advice and support around the recovery process.
How I use it has definitely changed. Before, it used to be around triggering myself, losing weight and that sort of stuff. Now I sort of use it mainly going to posts around recovery and give advice to people around how they can start recovery.
Megan Keem has had bulimia since she was 12, for so long that it's hard for her to picture her life without it. She was drawn to Pro-ana in her early teens, but now it frightens her.
A lot of the, I suppose, tips and tactics I found from Pro-ana sites, I mean, if it weren't for them, there would be a lot of things I wouldn't have engaged in. I wouldn't have done as, like, the behaviour wouldn't have been as bad as it was.
So does Kim think he's moderating a dangerous site?
The site's intention is to be positive. It's that being positive and allowing people to speak their mind when those thoughts are going to be eating disorder that creates a byproduct that can potentially be negative.
Do you think the site's harmful?
I think it can be, but I think the areas in which it's helpful are at least equal. People can come on there and they might get worse from what they read, but they might have gotten worse anyway, and they might get better from what they read.
Why do you think Pro-ana has such a bad reputation?
Probably because it has been dangerous. I mean, the Pro-ana reputation doesn't come from nothing. It's not all bad publicity. There's a lot of stuff on there that's not advisable, and I'm not going to deny that at all. There's a lot of it's effectively suicide tips from a certain point of view, and that's not a good thing. It's not undeserved.
In recent years, as Pro Anna has evolved, some research has recognised that sharing all the shitty details of eating disorders is cathartic for people who are dealing with a stigmatised mental illness. Kim has recovered, and the only reason he's still moderating a Pro Anna site is because it's, quote, hilariously understaffed, and he doesn't want to leave his friends in the lurch. He also reckons he's got the right temperament for the emotionally draining job.
These are people, and these are people who often know that they're not well and that they shouldn't be trusted. The message that's repeated very frequently is, you don't want this. It's not fun at all, and it's no secret that a lot of people aren't happy with their lives. They aren't happy with what they have, and they're not trying to push it. I don't think I've actually seen anyone who wants someone else to get sick. I mean, these aren't deranged lunatics. They're just disordered.
Hack. Triple J.
That's the moderator of a Pro Anna site talking to Joe Lauder. I'd love to hear from you. If you've used these sites, do they do more harm than good? Or did you actually find them helpful? I'd love to hear your experience, whatever it is. 1300 055 36, 1300 055 36. Now, we have Kath on the line from Melbourne. Kath, what's your experience? Have you seen any of these kind of sites?
Yeah. So when I was probably about 11, I developed an eating disorder, and I remember feeling like I wasn't sick enough to get help, and all I was completely obsessed with being thin, and so I was actually looking to those websites to try and lose more and more weight. I had a relapse when I was 26, and it was a pretty different story. Like, I actually knew at that point that recovery was possible, and I was looking for ways to get better. So yes, I avoided them at that point.
So what were some of the, I guess, the destructive or negative things that you saw on those sites?
It was pretty full on, I guess, at the time. It was 10 years ago. It was fairly unregulated. And so the kind of imagery, I guess, was the most powerful thing about it. So people posting their own imagery as well as the inspiration that they found all around the world, that impacted me the most. But then also the user tips for, well, this is what I did and this is how I achieved it. It's pretty full on stuff, and basically like a step-by-step how-to eating disorder guide for people who can be really young and really vulnerable.
Right. And was this sort of in the context of supporting each other and helping each other recover, or not at all?
It was sort of like framed as a, you know, this is a community. We understand you. We understand each other. We're the only people who know what it's really like. But on the other hand, there's this competitiveness, and there's this, I guess, deep self-hate and like self-involvedness that can happen with eating disorders, where they can't really see how much it could harm another person. So it's sort of framed as a support, but when you actually look at it, they're giving you tips that are going to help you destroy your body and your life.
Right, okay. So, yeah, sounds like really dangerous stuff. Where did you end up going for help, and what help was effective for you?
So this was quite a while ago, and I know that the methods have sort of changed in dealing with it. I got to the point where I felt like I was giving up. I was suicidal, and I just went to an emergency department and said, help me, I'm out of control. Mm. And they actually assessed me at the time and said, well, you're not sick enough to be admitted.
Oh, wow.
And so at that point, I went to my GP, and we kind of worked out a care plan from there. I did end up getting sicker and sicker and being admitted to hospital when I was sick enough. So
sad that it had to get to that point before you could get the help that you needed there. Kathy, yeah, we're going to get deeper into the kinds of treatment that is and sadly isn't available around Australia. Great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, bye.
In the studio, we've got Sarah Evans, who battles anorexia. We also have the CEO of the Butterfly Foundation, Christine Morgan. Sarah, thankfully for you, you've been able to avoid those pro-Anna sites, which is great. And during that story, Christine, you were shaking your head when that moderator was speaking. He was talking like he was helping the community, doing the right thing by the community, but I get the sense you don't think he is.
No, I don't. And that comes with a recognition, and I truly, truly get it, that for somebody who's grappling with the horrific thoughts and behaviours of an eating disorder like anorexia nervosa, you feel so isolated, you feel so misunderstood, you feel so not understood, that there's a compelling urge to go into a community where somebody will get it. That I totally understand. But consistently, day in, day out, when I talk to people who have recovered, they will say, if they have accessed those sites, whilst we felt compelled to go there, they actually encouraged what we call the unhealthy part of our thinking.
Okay, so does that mean that you shouldn't really be talking to anyone else with an eating disorder online? Because I imagine there must be some positives to having a peer support network.
Yes, there's definitely positives to having a peer support network. But one of the things to try and understand about an eating disorder is that, unlike a cancer diagnosis, where when you get the diagnosis, you immediately want to get better, when you have an eating disorder and a personality type that often goes with anorexia nervosa, during the illness, you are seeking to perfect your own behaviours. You are seeking to be the best at losing the most weight. And that competitive, perfectionistic nature is parasitically caught up in the illness itself. So if you go online or in communication, it can happen in hospital wards. If you're in a hospital ward with other people with it, there is a strong drive to compete with each other.
On the text line, hey Tom, I learned tips and tricks through Pro Anna websites at the age of 16. I found them horrifying but so, so enticing. I believe they played a big part in fueling my bulimia of 8 years. Fortunately, I sought help through Headspace. Treatment was free. Annalise from Melbourne says, the Eating Disorder Foundation, which Christine works for, is amazing, or that she works alongside with in partnership with, is amazing. I was severely anorexic and now I'm 4 years recovered, and they really helped me when I needed it most. And if you are struggling with an eating disorder or body image issues in general, you can call the Butterfly Foundation, which Christine's the CEO of, 1-800-ED-HOPE, 1-800-ED-HOPE for their support line. You can also call Lifeline, of course, 13, 11, 14.
Yeah, I'm pretty mind-blown by this, because I guess what I'm trying to think is, you've had 12 operations, if any of them have actually made you happy.
Nobody's Perfect with Tom Tilley.
You're listening to Hack in a week where we're taking a very in-depth look at our bodies. And on Tuesday, we brought you an ABC2 special called Hack Live on Body Obsession. And it was a fascinating hour of television. Christine was there jumping in the mix. We had also a bodybuilder, a Fitspo star, plus size model, and a whole bunch of other people got really honest about their body obsessions. And the show got a huge reaction on social media. So if you missed it, check it out on iView. It'll be up there for another couple of weeks. Now, today we are talking eating disorders, which affect almost 1 million Australians, which is a huge number. And the key question we're getting to today is where you go for help, where you get effective help. And as our guest Sarah Evans and our reporter Bryn Davies found out, there simply is not enough help out there in Australia. Here's Bryn, our reporter, talking to Margot, who's been struggling with an eating disorder for 5 years.
Living with an eating disorder for so long has been like living with another two or three tiny people inside my own head. One is pretty much always saying the same thing, I need to eat, which I refer to as Mia, short for bulimia. Then I also have the side of me that wants to restrict, and that's Anna for anorexia, telling me I'm a fat pig who can't control myself. And then I also have the side of me that is thinking you can't keep living like this, and that's the more rational side.
When Margot was 17, the pressures of full-time dance and a messy breakup triggered an impulse to starve herself, to gain a sense of control. After losing 20 kilograms and winding up in emergency following a suicide attempt, Margot tried to get inpatient care at a Sydney public hospital for her eating disorder. She says she was told she would have to wait 9 months for a bed because they decided she wasn't critical.
Before I was admitted, in order to make myself a priority, I intentionally relapsed and was actively participating in eating disordered behaviours in order to drop weight. By the time I actually got in, I was at my all-time lowest weight.
Over 6 weeks in hospital, Margot had six supervised meals a day, followed by something called bed rest. It's monitored time in an isolated room to make sure patients don't throw up their food. The rest of her time was spent in counselling, and learning how to look after herself properly, including cooking classes. But this level of care is not standard across the country. When Margot was eventually discharged, she struggled to take care of herself.
It just got to the stage where I felt like I was tearing strips off myself no matter what I was doing. And being a perfectionist, I was not doing recovery or eating disorder well enough for my standards, and I just ended up losing no matter what I did.
Margot's struggle to get treatment is not unique. In any given year, as little as 5% of people get any treatment for their eating disorder, according to the Butterfly Foundation. There are only 37 designated public hospital beds for adults with eating disorders in the whole country. The Northern Territory, Tasmania, and Western Australia don't have any beds at all. There are also no specialist eating disorder services in regional areas anywhere in Australia.
People with the eating disorder often don't see the severity of their illness in the same way as people around them.
Dr. Sloan Madden is an international eating disorder expert.
So where family and friends may see a young person as being malnourished and clearly very unwell, the young person with the eating disorder is often fearful that they are overweight and that they look much bigger than they really do, and that treatment will involve them having to eat and put on weight, which is something they're incredibly fearful of.
And that fear can be deadly. 1 in 10 people with anorexia die as a result of their disorder, with up to 20% from suicide. And there are other life-threatening complications, like low body temperature and blood pressure.
I think one of the things we do know about eating disorders is it's extremely difficult to recover without the support of a motivated and wider network. And for the young people that we see, their families really take that role on.
So would it be harder for someone who is over the age of 18 to recover than, say, a child or a teen who's under the care of their parents?
I think what we see is that it is harder for them, I guess, often to initiate treatment, but also the treatment process tends to be a longer and more complicated process.
That complicated process is not limited to inpatient care. It also involves a recommended 20 to 50 psychology sessions, plus support from dietitians and specialists. But Medicare only covers 10 psychology sessions a year, and dietitian costs aren't covered at all.
Long term, I do not want to be sick any longer. At the moment, I feel very out of control, and I feel like I don't have it in me to help myself.
Margot has withdrawn from treatment.
I kind of chose the lesser of two evils. Instead of being at a very immediate risk of killing myself, I chose to take a step back from recovery and from treatment.
Let down by the public health system, she's now forced to wait 12 months for private health cover because of her pre-existing condition. And as an apprentice hairdresser, she can barely afford it.
Because I was initially diagnosed with an eating disorder when I was 17, I wish I had been admitted right then and there before I had the choice to do it myself. Whereas if I had been admitted when I was 17 and was first diagnosed, it would be in my mother's hands, and I feel like it would have given me a better chance at recovery.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J with Tom Tilley.
Tough story there from Margot. That was reporter Bryn Davies. And if you're struggling with an eating disorder, you can call the Butterfly Foundation support line 1-800-ED-HOPE or Lifeline 13 11 14. Rory, it sounds like that story would have rung a lot of bells for you. Your 19-year-old sister really struggled to get help in Cairns, and you guys have had to move all the way to Brisbane.
Yeah, definitely. She was diagnosed last September, and she's spent most of the time since then in the Cairns-based hospital. But they just don't have the facilities or even the specialists who are trained to deal with someone who has this whole time been, you know, literally days from death and also with suicide. And so, yeah, last week my family made the decision to move from Cairns to Brisbane. So they packed up their entire lives.
Wow.
You know, as much as finding jobs, finding a new house. You know, my younger sister, she's just started uni. And finally, you know, she's been admitted into a private clinic in Brisbane that deals specifically with eating disorders. But the stress on my parents, you know, and her as well, it's been an absolute nightmare for our family.
You really would think a city the size of Cairns would be able to help someone in this situation, wouldn't you?
Well, definitely. And the thing as well is that it was the hospital staff in the end who actually said to my parents, look, you need to go elsewhere. We don't have the services that your daughter requires. And that's so disappointing, you're right, considering the size of Cairns. And you think of other young people in far more regional and remote areas around Australia and the lack of treatment or services that they're going to have access to is tenfold.
Yeah, I guess the great thing for you guys is that it sounds like you have a really supportive family, because I've got someone who's texted in that says, my family just tells me I look awful and then ignores my eating disorder and my constant binges and purges. I mean, imagine being in that situation.
Oh, definitely. It definitely has to be a full family support, especially for a young person. And without that, you know, I can only imagine how much more difficult it is.
Rory, it's been great to hear your experience, and I really hope your sister can turn the corner now that you guys have moved to Brisbane. I'm kind of blown away by how far your family's gone for her. It's incredible.
Yeah, 2,000 kilometres in distance alone.
That's amazing. That's beautiful, to be honest, in a situation of such trauma. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Amazing there. Now, in the studio, we have Sarah, who really kicked off this show with an email she wrote to us. Sarah, when you wrote that email, did you imagine we'd be at this point?
No, I didn't. But I am very fortunate to be able to tell my story, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, and your story sort of rings true to the one we just heard in that story from Margot and also Rory's sister, who was just talking about in that call. I mean, they couldn't get the help they needed in Kansas, a city of 142,000. You live in Hobart, which has over 200,000 people, and you've really struggled to get the help you need as well.
Yes, I have. And I've had a friend in a similar situation who actually did some crowdfunding and since has gone to America, to Montenegro, and returned and is back working and is, you know, functioning quite well. And that's just that's an extraordinary length to go to get treatment.
Yeah, we're just talking about a few thousand Ks, but that's a lot further than that. Very interesting. Christine Morgan's in the studio as well from the Butterfly Foundation. Christine, if you thought about how, I guess, how much we do need or the services that would be adequate, how far from that are we right now?
We are years away from it being done properly, because in order to have adequate services, you need multidisciplines. You need psychiatry, psychology, dietetics and medical. We don't have a workforce that can do it. But if we dream on, if we had the workforce that was needed, then we would need a significant investment from the federal government.
What about, here's an idea, I'm just going to throw this out there. What about if you created an extra wing on Headspace? We've already been building Headspaces in really important parts of Australia, like moving beyond the cities and even the suburbs, which is absolutely fantastic and it's had bipartisan support. Why not extend that service potentially, and people can come there for eating disorders as well, given it is a mental health problem?
We are actively working with Headspace to try and do just that. And one of the biggest challenges we have is not just the money, but it is finding health professionals who can actually treat the illness.
And a wide range of health professionals.
It is, but if you take the starting point as being GPs who can diagnose it, who can recognise and diagnose it, that is a difficulty in itself. It is extraordinarily hard to find a GP that has the expertise to be able to diagnose. Then they say, where do we send them? Now, Headspace would be a great entry point, but Headspace deals with it at what we call a primary care level, which is where it first presents. What you need with an embedded eating disorder is highly specialised treatment.
Sarah, what do you think we need most?
I mean, personally here in Hobart, there is nothing for me to actually seek treatment without just going to a hospital, being refed, and then
And the thing about your story is that you were able to get better treatment when you were younger, right? That's something we're hearing for people. And when you're an adult, it gets harder.
I was an adult when I developed an eating disorder. So I didn't have an eating disorder. I didn't have anorexia below 18. So I wasn't put into that hospital system. But the first treatment I did seek, I went to the mainland and have had since 4 admissions to the mainland because we can't get it here.
Yeah. And Sarah, we're about to hit the news. We've just got a few seconds left. But where to from here for you now?
Not sure yet, Tom. Hope, I guess. And Angie, the study that's going on, the genetic initiative.
Christine, any final words?
Sarah, you are amazing. I'm so glad you are participating at Angie, because we know genetics forms an essential component of this. And Sarah, and anyone out there who has an eating disorder, reach out. There are people who understand, and getting support is one of the most significant things you can do at whatever stage of the illness you are suffering.
Christine, great to have you on the show tonight and on the TV show on Tuesday night. You're amazing. Sarah, thank you so much for emailing us and having the guts to come on our show.
No problems. Thanks for having me.
Nobody's perfect on Triple J.
Fascinating to hear those stories and such brutal honesty. Linda Mariano is up next with a new music from What's So Not. Stick around for that. Catch up.